welcome to My Life in Football, and I'm really pleased to have with me a really good friend, actually. And last time we saw each other, I think face to face, was he brought in the actual North Trophy, I think, into the actual show.
Yeah.
But, really pleased to welcome Tony Russell, of course, manager of Cray Wanderers. Welcome, Tony.
Yeah, welcome.
Well,
to be fair, I know we tried to come in with the South African one as well, but we couldn't quite get it. It would have been nice to continue that little run we had of just me winning the league and keep bringing it in, which is a shame, but it's great. We'll wait until you win the Premier League then, and you can bring it in then.
Mate, that'll be the plan. I mean, if we can keep that arrangement and our team winning, then you can get in and see a trophy. I think we'll both be happy.
So, Tony, I mean, with football itself, I mean, how did you first sort of get involved in sort of non-league football and football in general? I mean, where did it all start for you? I mean, sort of what age and where did you first start? I assume playing first, was it?
Yeah, Gwynedd Borough. And then I played
I think I played about six games, and then the seven dads come in from Thames Meeting. I remember going down to meet Thames Meeting, and Keith McMahon was there. At the time, he was the assistant manager. And I went and met him, and it sort of went from there, really. Went to Thames Meeting under Blado with Keith. We finished second in the league. Craig won it, I think. I think Craig won the league and went up to the Ryman League at the time. And then Craig came in for me and said, look, you know, can you come in with us? And I went and played for Craig. Played for Craig for a few years. Got a really bad injury. First time I got a little bit major injury, I broke my leg bad. And then I had to come back and have another operation. And then ended up, went back to Tempe for a bit. By this day, during the Ryman League. They had their first year in the Ryman League and they still were struggling. And I remember Keith phoning me and said, look, you know, we've got, I think they had about five games left. They were just outside the relegation zone. I said, will you come in? And it was about probably this time of the year. Can you come in and sort of shore it up for us and get us over the line? So I signed. And then we'd done that. We kept them up. And then I just keep wanting to sign. I said, look, I'm done. I've just had twins. And boys, you know, and this is boring, you kick around, limping about. So, while I broke my leg, I started doing my coaching badges and sort of enjoyed that side of it. But there's no real ambitions to be a manager or anything, just want to keep involved in football with my money. And then he said, oh, what about a player coach as well for next year? You know, we won't use him unless we have to. And then he can take the. So I did, and he would be good, he had all pre season. You know, all my ideas, we've got plans from the back and I started, you know, playing around with a few things. And then we got off to a good start and then I remember, you know, one day I sort of about 7 or 8 games in. Doctor Lee called me before the game and said, look, we're going to change the formation here. I think they're playing where at home and they don't want to go through a rigid back four. He put a 4 centre-half, he didn't really want to play. He just wanted to be tacky, that was the best way to do it. It's fair enough. Obviously, I'm quite stuck in you, I didn't agree. I thought, no, I don't see the point of doing really well by playing, why do you want to stop? And he said, look, that's what I want to do, I'm the manager. I could expect that. And then I remember we went to a game, Ilford away, on a Tuesday night. And it was just rubbish. It was just long banging, like a Saturday, and I thought, no, I don't need this. So I was trying to keep in the week and said, look, mate, thanks for the opportunity, you blinded with me. You know, most people don't get the opportunity to come in and be a coach at the Eastman level, and I'm always be grateful to Keith for that. But he quite rightly said to me on the phone, he said, you probably need to do your own thing. You're such a double mule, you know, you can't work for anyone else because you have your way or you don't want to do it. And he's right. He's ultimately right. And so I did. So I sort of left it, and I went on a stag do. An old player, a stag do. Yeah, it's an old player. Went on a stag do. The Butlins had a weekend, and I was in a room with a guy I'd never met before. I said hello to him a couple of times, I didn't know he was called Theo Ball. And he said, I'm the manager of here in town, and my assistant's leaving at the end of the season. I've heard, you know, Pete speaks really well of you. How do you fancy coming in and being a number two? I said, I'm not really interested in the management side, but I'll do the coaching. He said, yeah, we'll put you down to that title, but I'll do the manager, you do the coaching. I said, I'm blinded. And then I went there. And then sort of 10 games into the season, I've just come off the pitch and then the chairman and him were rowing. They were going mental with each other. They had this big falling out. And what happened was the Kent League basically said, if you don't put a roof on the sand, we're going to relegate you. So to pay for a roof, he cut a wage bill. So obviously Steve wasn't happy about that. So he said, I'm quitting. I'm leaving. So I said, look, you know, I bought a few boys, you know, I've got quite close to them, let's just sleep on it. And then he didn't. And then he said he didn't, and then he spoke to me that night. I said, no, I'll find him. I think he went out and said, no, I'm definitely quitting. So the chairman phoned me and said, look, will you take training Monday? I want to talk to the players. And I went there, and the chairman said, look, this is a deal. There ain't no money. A couple of players left straight away, but one of the boys stood up and said, look, if Tony will say he'll do it for no money, we'll say he'll do it for no money. So it's sort of like, oh, wow. It's weird because I had no intentions of being a manager, but when, you know, a group of people stand up and address them and say, look, you know, we don't want to get paid if you say, you almost... I just said, look, I'll tell you what I'll do it to the end of the season. And then and then we'll go from there. And it's funny because we have no money, and I wanted to give boys money that were driving. So we had like deal away, and it was like an hour and a half drive. So what I wanted to do is just four cars. I wanted to give them like 10 or each, just to build some petrol up. So I said to the chairman, there's nothing we can do. He said, well, we pay £50 to have the kit wash. I said, oh, I'll do it. I'll wash the kit. So we went out there, and then I'll give you the 50 quid. Well, I took it home to my mission. Now, bear in mind, at that time, we had three young boys. The twins were one, and Ronnie, my eldest one, was five, six. And I'll bring them kits to wash every week on top of all that. You can imagine how much washing. That went down at the level of, but and it was a hard gig because they played at a running track,
yeah.
And so when you got there, you had to get there really early. I had to put the goals out around the back of the pavilion, up, jack them up on a trolley, wheel them out, put them, go and get the other one, wheel that out, go and get the dug out, wheel them out, go and hang the kit up just before. I was doing it for nothing, just to get the season done. And I replaced the divots, obviously the javelin and the shot put boys had been at it. So I'd go around the pitch and do that. That was before any of the players turned up. And after, I'd put everything away. And we ended up winning the cup for the first time in their history. And we went on a run of 10 games unbeaten. We got, I think we finished sixth, which is the highest I've ever finished. And then I'll say this, we won the cup final. And I remember waking up in the morning and it was like, I suppose, I've never been hooked on drugs, but it was like I was hooked. So I remember waking up, looking at that trophy, and that was me. I was addicted to it. I was like, the feeling that gave me was like, I want more of this. This is it, you know. So from that point on, I was hooked, and then the wages all come back. Not a great job. I think it was about 500 quid, and then we ended up going, start of the season, I think after 13 games, we'd won 12 and drew one, and we were flying one round from the quarterfinal with Vargas and everything. And then BCD, I just got an email, a phone call from the club down BCD, put a 7-barrel in fear. And at the time, BCD were fifth, and they were miles back. So I was like, I'm in an hour in what to do. And my assistant at the time said, you know, BCD had just come out of the Ryman League, they only got relegated because of some sort of path or something. It was some mad, I don't know if you remember it, it was some mad thing that they'd get that concrete path around. So, yeah, so we just went and spoke to the chairman. He said, look, we've got 750 quid. And I thought, and, you know, and our grand can go up. You know, EFSAN couldn't go up. The planet of running track. So we were top of the league. We couldn't go up to the wild regions. We won, aren't it? So we went over. It was in November. We went over in November. And then, it was weird because I got there and then met all the new players and then come to training and those two turned up. They all left. They all walked out. Which was not ideal. And then we lost the first three games and then we got a bit of luck. I remember the snow coming at the time and all the games got called off for 3 weeks and it allowed me to get everyone in. And we had some training people. I just swept it clear just to get on there and we worked and worked. And then the last 19 games, we won 17 and drew 2 to get promoted on the last game of the season. And then obviously the following year we won the Ryman North. We ended up extending that 34 games unbeaten, winning 32 of them. And then obviously winning the Ryman North.
Was that the season tone VCD one when it went right down to the wire? Was that between you and Whittam? Was it you and Whittam?
Yeah. Went to the last game of the season. That was my first season at that level. That was my very first season.
I don't know if it was you or Whittam, but one of you was at Chesham. When they were playing away at Chesham. Was that Whittam?
Yeah, Whittam. Yeah, we were under Romford. We beat Romford 6-0. They drew 1-1.
Yeah,
that was my first year. That was my first year at the level. It's hilarious because I remember we'd come up and no one had a clue who we were. I remember all these managers were getting their names on. They were going DDC and all that. And we were just loving it. Like, we had a load of boys that had only ever played in the Kent League. We had 750 quid. We had boys, most of the boys were on 30 quid. And we just come through. Before anyone took us seriously, we was up there. And then obviously went right to the wire. And then obviously my first year at that level, I won it, which is ridiculous. When I think about it, I mean, you know, the club, it was just amazing. I got there in a year and a half, we got promoted, and then we got one of the Ryman North. It was crazy. And obviously, we had a year in the Prem, that went well, done really well. And then obviously, the club said, look, we've had a 7-day from Craig Wanderers.
We had a few. I had a couple of offers, and I sort of said no. And then, but Craig, because I played for him, I knew a lot of people there, and I said, oh, no, I probably won't go. And I went and met him, and then once they told me about the plans and what they're trying to do, I'm always someone, I'm not really, it wasn't about money. They would confirm that. Up until this season, I've still been on the same money I was at DVD. It wasn't about money. It was like, I'm quite a forward thinker. It wasn't about what level they were at either. It was more, because I backed myself, it was more about, okay, here's a team that's on my doorstep that I know everyone there. They're building a £20 million complex that one day they think can get into League One. I'm a young manager for the long term. I don't want to be that manager who keeps jumping from club to club to club. I don't think that works for me. I'm someone that has a style of play that takes time. So it wouldn't benefit me to keep jumping around from club to club. So it just ticked all the boxes. And I had a really good conversation with the BCD chairman, Gary Rump, who is an unbelievable chairman. He's just unbelievable, isn't he? And you know, once I explained it to him, I think he understood that it wasn't about money. He couldn't speak to me to offer me any more money. It was never about money. It was more about the opportunity that Croke potentially give me, the platform that he could give me. So obviously I went over to Croke.
Cool. I mean, what was going back to that BCD, that sort of final couple of, you know, that sort of final couple of games, and in the final game when it, you know, literally could have gone either you or Whittam. And what was that day like for you? I mean, was that sort of like a real? So I know what the situation was. I think it was a year after that when it was Harlow and Needham, and we both got over 100 points each, and it was crazy, crazy final day. At one stage, we were actually sort of promoted. We were 1-0 up. They were drawing 0-0, and then eventually I think we won, they won, and they got promoted. But what was it like for you in that day? Was it a real sort of like a tense day as well for you, and just trying to keep you? Was Romford one of those teams that always finish strong anyway, aren't they? I mean, it's different now, but I mean, they used to finish really, really strong at that point anyway. I mean, what was it like?
I think as a young manager, you want to put yourself in situations, as many different situations as you can, because once you've dealt with it, or you haven't, you'll learn from it. So, the previous season, we'd finished like an absolute train. And obviously, bearing in mind, you think here we're already 14 points in front of us, and so we're here from Belvedere. And we were finishing like an absolute train. We were in a situation where it was a must-win game, every single game, to have an opportunity to go up. We got to the last game of the season to go up. So, it was the same squad and the same manager. So, a year earlier, we'd been in exactly the same position where we had to win. We had to continue to win. We had to deal with that pressure of continuing to win. So in terms of that, although it was, you know, it was a tense day, because I'd done it a year earlier, I felt a little bit more comfortable than I did. And one thing we did do, which is interesting, we learned, when we did it the year before, here from Belvedere, they kicked off, ended up kicking off 15 minutes later than we did. So they knew what they had, looked at it down the goal difference. When we found out afterwards, we spoke to Nicky and the other boys there, and I said, what they've done, they cut the net, so they wanted to lay it so they can know what they have to do if they got to the last 15 minutes. So I cut the net against Romford. I cut the net, and then the ref went to do what we think, we were pulling it, and he went, no, this just snapped, it's broke. And we're like, oh, right. So I said, take your time getting the tape out. So we took our time, and then the time we found it about, we kicked off 10 minutes later. So we already knew that Whittam drew, and we still had 10 minutes to go. So we were just rolling about on the floor, jumping around. But that's my point, what I'm trying to make. Experiences allowed you to give you a leg up, that you knew what we had to do. Because what we were saying is that if Whittam were winning 2-3, 4-0, we were going to start taking boys off, because we knew we had a playoff on the Tuesday. So I wanted to buy myself as much time as I can, that if it looked like it was not going to work and Whittam were winning, we can just make free subs, get key players off that we want to get off, and just try to rest people. We even spoke about going down to 10-9 men, just getting boys off and just getting in the shower and say, look, that's actually done, to try to give us like half hour before.
That semi-final would have been against Needham Market, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
So that would have been
Mark Mosey at the time,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Would have been a tough old game at the same time.
Good guy, yeah. No, he's a good guy, Mark. We had some really good games against him. It was a decent league that year. I thought Harlow were good, Needham Market were good. You know, it was some good side in there.
It was probably one of those seasons, if I'm honest. So I remember, you know, we went to Harlow, had to go to Heybridge Swifts on the Tuesday night or Wednesday night, whenever the semi-final was, and we'd already played them three times that year. They beat us in the FA Cup. They beat us home and away in the league. And we went there. And I still remember that day that we walked out onto the pitch and all the Harlow fans were right round the tunnel as you came out of the pitch, smacking on the tunnel and drums and
all that sort of stuff.
And Jody, before the game, had gone out onto the pitch with his chairman, Gary, and got presented the manager of the month for April. And I just remember turning around to Ray Dyer and saying to Ray Dyer, "We've won this." He said, "What do you mean?"
Yeah.
I said, "We won it." I said, "That's probably the biggest mistake, because you always see somebody get that, don't you, manager of the month, and then lose the next game, or nine times out of ten when you see that." And I remember speaking to Jody not long after that, and he said he reckoned that Harlow had won that game by them coming through the tunnel and the actual noise that the Harlow fans made all round this tunnel. About, there must have been a good hundred of them all round this tunnel.
I was there, no, I watched the game. It was incredible.
I went to go and have a look, see if I can take any of the players when we went up. I think it was 2-0, and then went to Witham, and we'd beaten Oman away, and lost in the final. So it was one of those. But so you got promoted into there. I mean, so, you know, all of a sudden you've jumped from Kent League, North, you've jumped up sort of two levels in two seasons. I mean,
in a year and a half, in a year and a half, I've gone from the Kent League to the Rhineland Premier. Now, you think of the Rhineland Premier we walked into. So you had Maidstone, you had Dully Gamlet, you had Billericay, you had Margate when they were absolutely frying it about. You know, when that guy was in charge, like, I mean, you had Hendon, they were some big clubs. And I'm going to go with the chairman, we had 750 quid, right? And I sat down, and I was like, "We're going to be in the Prem, what's the way for?" And he's like, "I don't fucking do any more." And I was like, "I am not going in there." No chance. Absolute no chance. I mean, we worked something out in the end. It wasn't, as I say, we would have had by far the lowest way for in that league by an absolute mile. And I remember going into that, that was the biggest learning curve I'd ever had for that season. Because we were playing really well, we kept getting beat. We'd be doing really, really well, and just kept getting beat all the time. And I think at Christmas, we had 11 points. We were rock bottom. And the chairman being the chairman, that's why I say he's probably, like, he's got to be out there with the best chairman that ever worked with BCD. I mean, we were rock bottom of the league at Christmas. I remember walking in the bar, we just lost, unlucky again, played really well. And he just sort of said, "Listen, mate, I know you're fit. I believe in you. I know you can do this." He said, just keep playing. Yeah, but how many could you say if you're bottom of the league would say that? I don't think it's any sense to do that. See, it helps the fact that I've just got back-to-back promotions. So obviously, you know, you stop fired, but still, that's always saying that I've appreciated. So I remember just kept me going. I remember, like, it is hard. Like any manager will tell you, it can be a lonely place being a manager. When things aren't going well, you feel like it's all you, and you know, you feel that the world's against you, every referee's against you know, every player's injured, but he's not injured. You just think everything could go wrong, I've got it wrong. And all of a sudden, we didn't change the player, we just adjusted it a little bit on training still. And the second half of the season, only Mason United got one more point than us. I think we got 49 points in the second half of the season. We're absolutely fine. We ended up finishing, I think, just below mid-table in the end. It was unbelievable. We won the last six games in a row. I think we only conceded one goal. We were absolutely... I mean, you know, we were all saying, we were saying, you know, we have this squad next year, we'll get in the playoffs. But I remember thinking, again, you've got to look at your environment. I'm thinking, could BCD go into the National League? Is the ground good enough? I don't know. You know, I think, as a manager, I think that should be your own, to take the club to the ceiling. What you think to see then. And if you've done that, then you can walk away. You know, I've been fortunate enough at BCD and Craig, and now, BCD here with them at Craig, I've broken all their records. I've taken them to the highest places. I mean, Craig's highest ever position in the Prem is the ninth in the Prem. And BCD have only ever been mid-table in the Rhineland North for 1 year, and Craig and Eric have never been anywhere near the top. So, overachieve, and then when you've overachieved, then you can only move. And I just felt at the end of that season, when Craig came and spoke to me, I felt it was probably the right time for me to move on. I've still remained really good friends with everyone at BCD. I pop down whenever I can. We had such a special time. It was just, for me as well, it was just such a special time, and the people were so nice to me that, you know, I appreciated it more what they were like when we wasn't winning, rather than, it's easy, everyone wants to be your mate, everyone wants to pat you on the back when you're winning, but you find out who you got around you when things ain't going well. And they were exactly the same to me when we were bottom of the league.
But then, so when you went into Cray, if I remember rightly, you had what Arlo had, I suppose, when he was at Cray to start with, really sort of frustrating time of those bloody playoffs. Of course, one of them was losing to Arlo yourself, and then of course, I remember seeing a very ticked off Tony Russell at the end of the following year in an interview. I can't remember exactly what had happened, but I know something happened was it the semi final? And somebody was, I don't know if you know who was actually interviewing it. I think it might be back of the net that were interviewing it. And I remember you not being very happy on that night.
Tony Gale, he took liberties, to be fair to him, but karma's good. It's going to come around in the end and he got what he deserved. So, no, basically, when I got to Cray, I think Cray was like one of them film sets. That's the best way I describe it. Really nice. But when you open the door and look behind it, it's an empty shell. Yeah. That's the greatest respect to Cray. So when I got there, they'd obviously just survived relegation from the Ryman North. Really well, done really well. Tommy done really well to keep them up. But there was no youth section connected to the club. So there was no reserve, no 23, no 18, no nothing. You had 16 players. The training facilities were poor. I remember going to the first training circle to show me, and it's a really narrow 3G that had been bashed. So it was like rock hard. And then you only get three quarters of it, and the other end was a women's team with Mo every time the balls kept going. So you're trying to do a pattern of play, and you've got this woman going, stop kicking the balls over here. And I'm thinking, what have I walked into? Yeah, to be fair, if you've got these Cray owners on there, they'd say, what was Tony like? They'd say, for the first 6 months, I drove their mad. I just didn't stop moaning. This ain't good enough. I think they labelled me diva at one point. Because I just couldn't do your job. It wasn't set up to succeed. I said that to him. We've done unbelievable, obviously, getting the playoff. And the problem is, we got to the playoff and crept into the playoff, and we had so many injuries. But without no reserves or 23s, I remember playing, we played Duckers up front, who's never played up front. We were playing people out of position. It was just we've done well to get to that point. But then, what's happened with Cray, they let us build. The idea of we started changing the equipment, our facility, our setup. They said, look, Dave France is one of the owners that got a really good sound, so I say to my kids all the time, don't come to me with a problem, come to me with the answer. Brilliant. He sat to me all the time. So rather than keep mind this ain't good enough, what do you want to put in place? Rather than saying this ain't good enough, what do you suggest then? So they allowed me to set up a youth section. So me and the secretary started finding the ground, started finding sorting teams, bought 23s in. 18, we just started to build a youth section. We were looking for training facilities. That was proving hard, so obviously a lot of them were pre-booked out. And then we got wind that Bromley said, look, we're switching to a 3G at the end of next season. So we were like, okay. So we put that on hold. And out of the season, because they basically let the pitch go to the pot. So we just literally cut the way through down, put kids in for that season. And then it was all about that setting it up for the following season. And the following season is when we were going to go. We could train at the ground at Bromley. We got some software. We filmed the games. Players get apps. We can give them clips of the games. We can give them feedback. We've got a yoga teacher in at a sports centre on a Monday. Injury prevention stuff. Stretching. All the patterns of play could be done on the pitch. We had a 23 to come in and mimic them and also be the backup to the first team. So we were ready then. We were ready to succeed. And obviously we've done well. We got into the playoffs and yeah, that was not good. That was really not good. We went 2-1 up at the Man Centre for half time. We were 2-1 up with Art. And it was funny because
this was against Wharton Casuals.
Wharton Casuals, yeah. But we played them the week earlier in the league and I didn't mind that girl. He was sort of, at the time, he seemed a nice enough fella. He was moaning about Gary Alexander at Greenwich Borough at the time, saying, I've known him for years, and when he scored against us, he really over-celebrated, and I was fuming, we'd had a row and all that. I fancied it, it's disrespectful, and he was giving it all that. And I'm like, I don't need to get involved in it, but I was like, all right, okay. Anyway, we got sent off, they beat us fair and square. We lost the game, not a problem, shook his hand, wished him all the very best for the final.
And obviously there was a lot of fist pumping, which you would, I ain't got a problem with that. You know, he was up to the crowd and all that, again, not a problem with that. And then we've gone into the dressing room, shut the door, spoke to the players, obviously they're down the dump. And someone said, look, you have to interview out there. So about 10 minutes after the game now. And I've opened the door, and that crowd, when you open the home dressing, you can see the away dressing, it's like opposite, and they had the door open, and he's standing there, like, veins out, screaming, going, like staring at me doing it. So I just lost my head. Yeah, I've lost my head. So me and him a bit of a thing in a tunnel. And then, and obviously I'm obviously wound up, and then I put a video camera and a mic in my hand, and thought it wasn't the best. So I'm absolutely fuming, just want to kill him. And then I've got to do an interview, you know. I haven't watched it back, but I can imagine it wasn't a great viewing, if I'm honest, because I was fuming. I was absolutely fuming. But
you could tell. Trust me, you could have...
Yeah, I was listening. No. I actually don't remember. My head was that gone. I can't actually remember what I said and what the questions were. I couldn't even tell you 5 seconds after I was fuming. But, you know, I see he's not in football no more, so probably a good place.
I mean, did that give you more ammunition to go again than, say, for last season?
Yeah, no. It was, you know what? It was good. It was a nightmare. It was probably it was a nightmare time because I remember we lost the playoff in on Tuesday. And my mindset, I've always been the same. If something don't go well, I'm straight away going to go get at it. I want to work harder and get at it. So in my naivety, really, you know, we lost the game on Tuesday, and I had the players in on the Friday for chat about the following year. Now we're all upset. We're all, you know, we're all down in the dumps. And the meeting with one of the owners, it didn't go well. Most of the running eye and things were said, and I was fuming. So I've gone into this meeting, and it's weird. It's still, we laugh about it now, me and Brian. We sat there, and what we've done is, we've got them in the barn, there's a play tent at Bromley. We were sitting in the play tent, and we were trying to send them in. The next one's come. They must have all been talking.
The far left-hand corner, if we've got the main stand, it's to the, if you're looking at it.
That's the one, yeah. We were in there, me and Brian just sitting down close, and the players were coming, the captain coming first, Lee Dawson, had already signed a contract for the following year and said, I want to rip my contract up, I don't want to be here no more. And I was like, whoa. And he's like, yeah, I just feel that I need to change and da da da. So we were like, listen, we don't want anyone at the club, we don't want to play for the club. So he went. So he's gone out and obviously spoke to the boys, and they're coming in, and, well, we spoke to 20 people, and only 3 of them committed to the following year. Wow. It was an absolute nightmare. So it was like, I must admit, I thought, maybe I'll just have to walk away from it, because it was just, it shouldn't, football's always been fun to me. So when you're going home and you're like, your head's gone, like my head's gone, you know, we just lost in the playoffs. None of the players want to really commit. But before falling out with the club, it was like, what is going on? Like, and then we just sat, me and Vinesy, we sat in his kitchen. I remember we were speaking about it. We were just having a few beers in his kitchen, me him and Nathan. And we were moaning about everything. You know, me and Vinesy, they don't appreciate us, they don't do this, they don't do it. We went up about 5 minutes, and so Nathan went, are we leaving? And I went, oh, no, we're not leaving. We're going to win the league. I said, oh, I'm going to show them all. That's when me and Vinesy started laughing. We went, no, we're going to show them all. So we just got to work. We just literally just walked, got all the boys back in. It was a different atmosphere. As I say, all they needed was just a week away from it. Yeah. It was too soon. Once we got them a week away from it and sat them back down and said, look, okay, let's do that. And then we brought in one or two, which were key. Obviously, we lost Lee Dawson, who's fantastic, but we replaced him with Tom Phipps. He's in the league below. And I only watched him. The game, our season had finished, but the Kent League were behind. And they were still playing games on a Thursday, so where I wanted my football fix, I still was like, wanting to get him, so I drove all the way to Beersford. And he was playing, he was playing at Beersford, and I watched him, I was like, no, he's good. So we got him in, and then Bradley Pritchard came available, with the Gwynny Borough thing went to pop. That was just key, it was just unbelievable. And then, we just started the season and just didn't stop. We were just relentless, and we got out in front, we led from start to finish, and then obviously, you know, we ended up winning the league for the first time in Crazy History, which was pretty special.
and then of course you jumped in there into the Prem this season. And you know, I think at the beginning of the season when me and Keith were sitting there looking at the table, I mean, the two names that he mentioned, and we sort of looked at each other. I sort of looked at him when he mentioned the two names, and they were both the teams that, you know, that I think they got promoted from the previous year, which was Hornchurch and yourselves. And he's literally, I think, all the way through the season, he, you know, whenever we speak about who's going to, you know, push Worthing or get close enough to Worthing or even beat Worthing, you know, the name Cray always seems to come up all the time. I mean, how did you go from sort of winning that league? And is that more of a spring effect, a bit like it was from the Kent League to the North League, where you've won, you know, the South League last year and then bang, straight into the Prem? Have you had that sort of effect again?
I think anyone will tell you in football, momentum is massive. Momentum, if you can get momentum, you're flying, you've just got to nurture that. So, really, it was don't panic just because you've gone up, don't just get rid of a load of boys and bring a load of new ones, and you're on to something good here. We'd won the league with like 5-6 games to spare. We just need to just add one or two, which we've done. And we just had a really. The 23, the manager left. He went to Barking, and the team just disbanded. So we haven't got a 23 this year, and that's cost us a little bit. We just got so many injuries at the start of the season. Derry Leader, in the last pre-season game before the season, broke his nose, but he collapsed. So we had to have an operation, so he was out for 8 weeks. And then Tom Coles broke his toe, the left back, so he was out for 6 weeks. The right back, Barney, broke his rib, so he was out for 7 weeks. And then Fitzy torn his hamstring off the bum. He was out for like 14 weeks. So, and on top of like Tom Murphy pulled his hamstring, we just had so many injuries. And what we've got, because we haven't got a 23, we've got 16 players. Yeah. So we're just patching up. So it's all about, all we spoke about is just staying in touching distance of everyone, the playoffs. And we were down about sort of Christmas time, we were down about 8, but loads of teams had games in hand. And then everyone started to come back. And then once they come back, turn of the year, everyone's back, and then we're flying there. We're absolutely flying there. As I say, it's momentum's key, and I think we've had 14 games since the turn of the year, and I think we've won 12 of them. And
I was just checking there, sitting second, game behind Worthing, 7 points behind, 64 points. I mean, that's a, you know, great, you know, great lot of points, you know, for somebody that's in the division for the first, you know, first.
Mm. Well, we've working around the way of it. We played them at their place, and they hadn't been beat for 4 months, and they're absolutely cruising, and we beat them at their place. And then since then, they obviously, the results have been, they've drawn a couple, they've lost, and so they're having a little, I wouldn't say a wobble up, but they're, you know, from going 4 months unbeaten, now all of a sudden their results are a little bit inconsistent because teams now think, actually, they're not unbeatable. Curry beat them. And obviously we continued winning, and now we win our game now. We've got 4 points behind them with 9 games to go. It makes it interesting, but obviously with what's just happened, you know, that momentum's had a bit of a shunt.
I mean, you've got literally Crewe Casuals, Folkestone, Bognor, Haringey, Bishop Stortford, Leatherhead, Hornchurch and Carr Shorten. So probably
Chesnant as well. We've got Chesnant as well in there.
So you know, these are fair old, you know, and really sort of tricky ties in as well. But how do you get that, if you do come back, say, end of April, how do you get that back? I mean, because we were speaking on Monday night and saying, look, you know, it's not saying April the 3rd, but you've got, if you're not training with them, and all of a sudden I've seen people like the Kent FA and the Surrey FA and people that have turned around and said, no training. So how then, if you get back to teams that like that, how do you then get them back match fit for the 3rd? There's got to be some kind of a run-up, hasn't there, before that first game?
We won't be back in the 3rd. I mean, forget
that. But I'm saying
forget that.
But whichever day it will be, you still got to have that couple of weeks probably beforehand.
What I've read it, the way I've read it is, we can still train, because obviously we've got our own land. So no one goes in that land. They've done a really nice pitch there now. They've spent $10,000 on the pitch. But we've got that pitch to ourselves. So we're the only ones who can use it. So what we sent a text out last week, anyone feeling unwell, don't come. Everyone's feeling fine, come training. So we trained for a couple of hours last week, and we'll train again Saturday. There's no way we're going to be playing early April. There's no way that we're going to be playing
I don't think, in April. I don't think the only way they're going to do it, and the messages leaking we're getting, is they're looking to align ourselves with the Premier League. That's what the Eastern League are doing. And the Premier League have said, oh, they can go up to the 30th of June. Now, I think the dangerous thing to do when you're a non-league league is trying to align itself with a Premier League. I mean, we're very different, and clubs spend the summer to do maintenance and sort their pitch out and reseed it and things like that. And then you're going through that. And also, what happens with players that are getting paid? People's contracts run out in May, at the start of May. What happens there? So it's just carnage. Me personally, what I think they need to do, they need to, if we haven't played a game by the final league game of the season, then they need to make a decision. They either scrap it and say, look, it's just a freak thing that's happened, and we cancel the league and everyone stays in the same league and we go again next year. Or they do stop it now, do the points per game, and we'll promote and let it go from that. That's the only two things. Dragging it out and keep stringing clubs along, you're gonna break them, because the clubs can't afford it. You're going to end up ruining a load of non-league clubs on the back of something that's no one see coming and no one's prepared for. Because I've heard people comparing and saying, well, you know, it's the same as when World War II broke out, they cancelled the league then, that's what we need to do. That's such a stupid argument. People say that, doesn't know history. You don't, because when the World War II broke out, they'd only played two league games. It was in September. They played two and three league games. So it's easy to cancel a league after two and three league games. You're talking about 33 games into a season, nine games to go. I mean, it's such a different comparison. I'm not sure they're even comparable. It's an isolated, one-off incident that no matter what decision they make, they're going to upset people. They are. If they cancel the league more than a tipsy, everyone's going to go, you know, that's not fair, we're up there, we put these players together, we spent a lot of money, a lot of effort. But if you put people up points for a game, and people send people down, they're going to mind, well, the season wasn't completed. So whatever happens, you're going to upset people. We have just got to understand, as people, that this is a one-off incident. Whatever decision they go with, we've just got to run with it. And just say, look, okay, I'm not happy about it, but we can't drag it out all summer. Because people will go away with their kids. You've got, you know, maybe going to June and July, you're like starting, you've got players going away. What's going to happen to fall out is clubs won't be able to afford to pay players. So you have loads of players leaving now. So if you go back in June and start playing matches this season, you're going to have teams can't get sides out. And there's going to be teams winning 12-0, 30. It makes an absolute mockery of it. Yeah. You've got to either, if we've not played by the last game of the season, make a decision and we'll run with it. You might not be happy with it, but we'll run with it. And then park it up and we'll go again next season. Just keep it real. Otherwise, it's going to go all the way through the summer. Pitches are going to be like, no. Clubs will be on their knees. Pitches are going to be ruined. Clubs are going to be ruined. We're not the Premier League. We are a non-league team where people go to work and we play. So just to get back to that, some sort of normality. Don't drag it out.
Yeah. I suppose on a good side, on a good news for Craig, I remember when we first started doing the show, some 6-7 years ago, and your chairman came on the show then, and he let sort of something sit there about that, you know, that Cray had still not been, you know, hadn't got a home, and they were sort of nomads and had been nomads for a period of time, etc., etc., and Harry was looking at trying to, you know, get a new ground for them, etc. That was sort of 7 odd years ago, and then all of a sudden this year all the planning permission and all the jigsaw pieces are falling into place. That must have been a fantastic day for you, for him, and everybody involved at the club, to know that you're going to have, as you said, a £20 million all-purpose stadium up and going, what, season after next, or whenever it's going to be? I mean,
yeah, so about 12 months from now, it'll be done. Listen, that was the reason why I came over. And obviously, we've got so invested in it now, you know, we're so far down the line, and listen, the 400 have been pulling their hair out of it, you know, no one see that coming, it's just been an absolute nightmare after the nightmare. But you know, even before I got there, the 4 or 5 years before I came, they were getting relegated, they were fighting relegation. So it's been a real doom and gloom time for the club in the last sort of 6 years. But lucky enough now, you know, it's our turn sitting the light. You know, we're shining now. Like, we're in a purple patch, the club off the field, of building, and on the field, we're winning, you know. So, you know, the clubs, to me, there ain't many non-league clubs at the moment doing what we're doing. You know, we're flying on the pitch and we're flying off it as well. So
you know, all the supporters that have been so loyal to the club, the good times are about to come, because when we move to that ground, you know, I've seen what they're about to do. It's next level what they're doing. I think the only way is up for this club. I think that it's going to keep going through the league, whether I'm involved or not, but they will keep ploughing through the league, and I think, you know, we're knocking on the door of the programme within 5 years, I think.
So how's the ground going? How's it progressing? Have you been down to have a look?
Yeah, like, we trained down there. So we trained down on the Saturday, and the youth section that played down there. So I popped down there to see that a couple of times. Yeah, they cleared all the area. So the big area now where the stadium's going to go. Building work literally about to start now on the stadium. I think it will take 12 months to get out within 12 months. We've got one more year at Bromley after this, and then we're moving in. They've got some really good ideas. They want to pack it out. They want to get 2,000-3,000. They're throwing some ideas, maybe giving away pre-season tickets to local residents as well, which would be great to pack it out and get a real atmosphere going, and flags and noise, and, you know, so it's, it's, they're full steam ahead, and, you know, they're buzzing. The owners are just like, they can't wait, you know, they literally can't wait. They, obviously, they know exactly what's coming. I have a good idea what's coming, but they know exactly what's coming, you know,
3G.
What's that? 3G, yeah, 3G.
Not only is he looking forward to it, your chairman's building it as well, isn't he?
He is. No, that's what two out of four owners are the property developers, so that's what they do. So it's been quite really getting another company in. So they're doing it. Hillman's a bit of a sort of some of the stuff he does, he's meant in these games, he's meant to be sort of next level good in the stuff, you know, and the wacky ideas he comes up with and what he does, you know. He's got a sort of penthouse,
and we went there for the Euros, and it's just the maddest gap I've ever been in my life. It's just crazy. So, and he thought of that himself, so God knows what we're going to walk into, but he's got some grand plans, and from what I've seen and what they sort of tell me snippets when I catch up with them, it's mad. Yeah,
I suppose you've only got to hope. I think if I'm right in saying, he told me it was a strip club on there before, so I suppose you just got to hope that that's not there anymore.
It's still there. Yeah, we've been in there. It's obviously not open, but we've been in there. It's got metal bars, like there's like prison bits. Oh, it's crazy. Yeah, no, we've been in there. We've actually said if we go up this year, we're going to have a party in there. We're going to have a party in there. We have said that. It's still there. Yeah, I think it'll be up. That won't be tough. So I think the idea is that three grass pitches and three G pitches for all the youth sections to play in the stadium.
So it's a big old place then where you move.
Oh, it's massive. Yeah, it's massive. I mean, the land is just, it's huge. It's a big bit of land. Yeah, it's a really big bit of land. So, like I say, the sky's the limit. You think 3G pitches, they say on average they're getting from £200,000 to £250,000 a year rental on one of them. We've got three of them, plus the stadium, plus three grass pitches, so you've only got to look at the income that can come into the club. And, you know, the owners are not looking to make a penny out of the club. They want to be self-sufficient, and everything that comes in the club will go into the football side of it. So you can imagine what the potential is and what potential we could do with that. And that's why when I first moved to VCD, from VCD, there was a few people sort of turning their nose up. So I dropped down the league and found it was about money, but they'll soon realise why I did it in probably the next 12 months when they walk in and come and see it.
That's a final question for you before I let you go. I mean, there's one of my favourite players of all time played for you, I think this season, or definitely last season, in Junior Dadson. But the other one, is it Michael Power that used to score the goals for you? What happened to Michael?
So, Shaggy, basically, he's a scaffolder, and he popped his back. Was that a bulging disc or something, slipped the disc or whatever, so he just couldn't move. His back went, and we got him some treatment and that, but it was always going to be a thing where you have to manage it from this point forward. He just couldn't move. So we helped him out. One of the sponsors has got him a job now, so he works with, he's off the scaffolding now, and he works for one of the sponsors, so we sorted him out that way. But in terms of playing top level football, it was never going to happen. I think he's dropped down to play for the area of town. But what I will say is, Shaq's probably the best player I've ever worked with, most naturally gifted player. But we were facing with another artist, and he's all right, a guy called Joe Taylor. He's so. So we were facing with Joe Taylor. Obviously, Joe Taylor's done stop scoring. I think he's top goal scorer in the Prem. And we managed to sort him from Margate's bench. He couldn't get in Margate's side, and we've given him a platform. And I think he's got 30 odd goals now this season. So, Miss Shaggy, loved him. You know, as I say, one of the best. He's a good guy as well. I've known him for a long time. I played him in the Prem. You know, but to replace him with Joe Taylor, you know, it's very similar. I remember Keith on your show would say, "Oh, Kratos, Louis, I don't know what they'll do." You know, we went and got Luke Carey, and anyone that played against us, he's just as good as Luke Carey at Louis with his feet. So we did a lot. Our recruitment is very good. We have a list of players that, on our travels, we play against. Someone does a lot. We white little Portman, and whenever we need a certain position, we go to that list. So, me and Brian are very big on recruitment. That's what he does for a job. So we try to leave no stone unturned. So our recruitment is good, and we lose big players like Bluey and Michael Power, and replace them with Luke Carey and Joe Taylor. And it's obviously the transition's been really smooth, and we've continued down our merry way.
Listen, Tony, I really have enjoyed this chat. I really have. I must admit, it's probably one of the best ones we've had so far. A really good chat. So I really appreciate your time and giving up your time today, and wish you and Craig Wanderers and, of course, the Hillmans and everybody all the biggest success you can get in the future.
Thanks, Dave. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, mate. See you later.